All right, today's episode, talk about, will two conferences dominate college football the way they're dominating this College World Series? Are rematches such a bad thing? The stubborn Rose Bowl is still being stubborn. And is a taco a sandwich? An actual judge has made a ruling.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
That kindly old man down the street could secretly be harboring a biblical weapon.
Russ Dellinger.
Probably some like advanced, you know, slingshot with incredible technology.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I'm not sticking around for this.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and we're not going to talk a whole lot of college baseball here, but the College World Series is set, and it potentially gives us a little topic for college football. Actually, it's not quite set. As we tape, seven of the eight spots are in. Tennessee, number one seed, will play number eight, Florida State, to open up in the first round. Number four, North Carolina, will play number 12, Virginia. Number two, Kentucky, making their first appearance, will play either number seven, Georgia, or number 10, NC State. And number three, Texas A&M, will play Florida, which was unseeded going in. I don't really like baseball that much, so I have not watched, although I find college baseball more exciting than Major League Baseball. I have spoken to Sean Sullivan, our former producer, a.k.a. Sullyvall. He has convinced me Tennessee will win this year, so I will pick Tennessee as my champ. Go Big Orange. I know they've been really good. They got the exciting team and the coach and all that. Now, Sully has been known to make bold predictions in the past, like the U.S. men's national team will win the next World Cup, win it. Gets a little above over his skis, but I think this Tennessee team could do it. So anyway, that concludes, unless you guys have a real thought.
Well, the more important thing is who's going to win the Jell-O shot.
Yeah, the Jell-O shot challenge we are going to get into as that goes.
Tennessee also the favorite in that.
I would say
too.
So.
I would say Tennessee's strong favorite. Although I have a theory for why Kentucky could win. But
oh, really? So that the local pizza place has the Jell-O shot challenge. LSU just went bananas last year, and I believe there's some of them are still hungover.
some of them might still be wandering around.
They lost their car keys to the rent a car, just couldn't make it home. What is your theory on why Kentucky could win this Jell-O shot challenge?
Well, they've never been to the College World Series before, so they're very excited to be there. And secondly, they haven't spent any of their money in years going to the NCAA basketball tournament very far because they keep getting eliminated early. So they got a lot of disposable income to throw at this thing here. I think the Kentucky fans will be at Omaha en masse and will be at Rocco's and will be Jell-O shotting with great gusto.
Pat's always got to get the little dig in. In the compliment.
Is that a dig or is that just really kind
reality?
Of how
reality. Look, they come off the Derby in May, Rocco's in June, right?
That's there you go. Yeah.
We will see. All right. So here's what's interesting, perhaps. This year, and granted, this is a 1 year outlier, but let's overreact. All eight teams are going to be either from the SEC or the ACC. And we already have some rematches, all those types of things. Two leagues. Now, this has not always been the case. Obviously, Pac-12 teams have done really well. Big 12 teams have done really well. Even Northern team and Notre Dame. I don't know if Notre Dame made the World Series. Yeah, they make it.
I think they did.
Stanford was in it. Yeah, Notre Dame. Yeah, Michigan was in there. So you can do it from these other leagues. And then certainly some of the California teams historically have done really well. You know, Northridge or these types of things. Coastal Carolina, some smaller ones have made some runs, some epic runs. But at this point, it's two leagues. And this doesn't surprise me. These leagues care probably the most about college baseball. And if I was going to play college baseball, I certainly would not go somewhere where it would certainly have a lot of appeal to go somewhere where it's not snowing or just muddy during the beginning of my season. I think, you know, be hard to recruit.
Yeah, there's a weather correlation here with success in baseball and in softball.
Yeah.
With the weather, for sure.
Understandable. Syracuse, tough. It's a tough recruiting cell.
Yeah.
On the flip, you don't see a whole lot of other, you know, the North dominates hockey, right? So you got a thing. So there's a lot going on here, but here's where we're gonna turn this into a football topic. Two leagues dominating the College World Series Final Eight. Football, we now have the SEC and the Big Ten as the two dominant programs, the dominant conferences financially, and with a lot of really good teams. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Is this a preview of what is to come in football, where it's basically two leagues just completely dominating a more expansive playoff? And is that a concern, Pat Forty?
I think it is a potential preview, and it's absolutely a concern. I mean, we do know they're going to have the most money. They have won all the championships other than Clemson in the last however many years, and it's many years, going back to, I guess, Florida State in 2013. And the way that there were certainly some theories broached about how the playoffs should be constructed in terms of automatic bids and who should get them. And lo and behold, the Big Ten and SEC wanted most of the automatic bids, even though they should probably get them anyway. And I think the more these two leagues work together and work possibly against everyone else, the better the chances that they continue to distance themselves from everybody. And we get a playoff bracket that doesn't look too dissimilar to what this College World Series bracket looks like, except you swap out Virginia and North Carolina and Florida State, and you put in Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State, or Ohio State and Michigan and Oregon, or something like that. Because that's the other thing, obviously, is these two leagues are adding absolute powerhouses, Texas and Oklahoma for the SEC, and then the Pacific Northwest plus the Los Angeles schools for the Big Ten. So it further increases their chances of having all the best teams and getting all the bids. And getting a lot of like rematch kind of games in the opening rounds and in quarterfinals.
Yeah, the rematches will come, and they will come quite a bit. I know we talked about this, 'cause I wrote about it a few months ago, how, you know, they should try to avoid first round rematches. They're, as of now, they plan on not doing that, or not putting in an official like rule or policy to avoid first round rematches. And there will be at least one. I just like crunched the numbers. I think it was around like 7 of the last 10 years in the CFP, there was one, you know, there was a first round rematch. So almost, you know, like 0.8 times you'll get a first round rematch. And imagine how many rematches we'll have in the quarters and semis and so on. We're going to have a lot of rematches every year, maybe at least a couple a year. So that's the most kind of concerning thing for me. It does devalue the regular season a little bit, but I think the overall point about, you know, two leagues dominating a postseason is spot on. I mean, I think we're going to have, you know, SEC and Big Ten, you know, get around, if you crunch the numbers or so, it's around 70%. Those two teams will combine for 70 to 75% probably of participants in the playoff. You go back the last 10 years of the CFP, the numbers bear it out. I mean, they really do. It's around, like I said, it's around, I think it's around 65, 70%, something like that, when you look at the numbers. So yeah, we're getting a little preview here of what it's like. A lot of rematches in two leagues, basically playing for the championship.
What about this, though? Obviously, we could have this, you know, two teams could easily be in the top. The quarterfinals next year could be all Big Ten. Actually, it won't be. They've done two things to make sure that can't be the case.
Right.
Obviously, the top four seeds are conference champions. So.
Yes.
the ACC and the Big 12 are almost certainly, unless a Mountain West or somebody else jumps in as that fifth, it gets in the top four, which is possible. Big 10, Big 12 could absolutely beat itself up, and a 12-0 or 11-1 Boise or Fresno State or something like that, or Memphis, you know, AAC, whatever, could jump in and get that fourth spot, which would be alone be kind of wild. But those four spots are going to be, so at least two teams will make the quarters. We've seeded in two teams that probably, and in some years this will be a big dispute, as you can imagine. Imagine if Boise State is the four seed and getting a bye, and most people look at them as, you know, the 10th, 11th, 12th best team at best. But that could happen, because if you get a Big 12, we know the Big 12 is going to be crazy, right? Easily could have two, three lost Big 12 champion that might be better. So you have that cuts it a little bit. I think one of the issues that makes this somewhat jarring, and believe me, I am somewhat slightly jarring. I'm not jarred. There's no jar here. No jar. Is all of these teams are in the southeast part of the country. Again, we just discussed why that might be, but they do have sunshine in California and Texas and the, right? I guess we got Texas A&M. But when your geographic range runs from College Station to Charlottesville, I guess that'd be the distance. So if it's a Big Ten SEC alone, again, runs to at least Austin to the west. The Big Ten is really the Big Ten Pac-12. It's two conferences. So if the Big Ten representatives in the thing are USC or Oregon or Washington or whatever, maybe it's less of a by they're Big Ten in name, but geographically, at least, you're not sitting on the West Coast going, I got nobody. Or you're not sitting in the North going, College World Series, I got no one to root for here. This is a Southeast dominant league, and we discussed why that might be. But does that help? That I think Oregon is the team you're looking at coming in and going, oh, it's a Big Ten team. It is, but it's in Eugene, Oregon.
The Western Flank.
The Western Flank. Dan. The Western Flank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess that helps. Again, it's completely ridiculous to have them in the same conference, but it does. It doesn't mean you can't have some geographical diversity come playoff time if those teams from the West, you know, perform well enough to get in there at least, and then you've got somebody playing on Pacific time, and you may have a home game in California or Oregon or whatever. Or Seattle. I mean, this won't be quite as parochial as the College World Series is going to be from that standpoint. But it's still, you know, we are trending in a way that I think invites people in some parts of the country to pay less attention. I would imagine ratings for the College World Series are not going to be that good in a lot of the country. And if you end up with a even more parochial football playoff eventually at some point, I would imagine you're going to see people in certain areas just say, "Yeah, I don't need to watch it."
It is kind of weird, like given how big the Big Ten, really the Big 12, and I guess throw in the ACC too. The Big 12, Big Ten, and ACC now all have kind of West Coast, you know, Western members, and it probably puts people on the West Coast in a awkward position as far as like what you root for, you know, like if you're a USC fan, do you root in general for West Coast teams? You know, obviously you're going to root for USC, but outside of that, do you root for West Coast teams?
Like, do you root for Cal more than you would root for Purdue?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting situation. I mean, I'm just thinking, I'm like, me personally, like my family, right? They root for teams in their geographic footprint in the Southeast. Like, that's just that's what they do. That's what they were kind of brought up to do. But I can imagine if all these, you know, I don't know, if your conference is split across the country, do you feel the need to root for your conference more than your region? Because now no longer are conferences in a region.
The SEC's kept it. I give them credit as best they can.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I agree. I mean, let's say you're a Michigan State fan. And it might be too personal to be Michigan State. I don't think they could have, I don't think a lot of Michigan State fans are rooting for Michigan or Ohio State when they're in the thing. But let's say you're a Minnesota fan. Okay. So you're the Minnesota
there
fan.
There you go. Yeah.
Do you root for Michigan and Ohio State when they were in the playoff because of the regionality? Some people in the North even will root for Notre Dame, although there's generally not. But like some regionality, you just don't want that. If you're a Minnesota fan, do you really care about Oregon? Like, to me, Oregon, USC, these schools have come in. I would hate those schools. I would hate that this happened. Your chances of success in sports are less because your league just added people with more resources. I still don't know why they even voted to expand these people, but they did. And now you're like, am I excited? Because maybe you could sit there and be like, hey, I'm happy Iowa's doing well, or I'm happy, let's go Spartans. Go, hey, Purdue's in the championship game. I want Purdue to win the national basketball championship. It'd be good for the Big Ten. We haven't won a basketball championship since Tom Izzo in, what was it, 2000, 2001, whatever.
2000.
Yeah. Do you really have any allegiance to these new schools?
None. Absolutely not. Nobody should be able to make you. Again, this is like cheering for money. It's antithetical to all of a sudden say, oh yeah, Big Ten pride. Look at Oregon. They, you know, they got good distance running and they may be good in football. That's awesome. They don't care. You know, it's not been baked into you to care. And all of a sudden now you're supposed to. That's why I will be interested to see, because nobody roots harder for conference glory than SEC fans. You know, they somehow, you know, kind of, even though they all fight like crazy, but they all brag when their teams win championships, even if it's not their school. But now with Texas and Oklahoma, what are they going to do there? Are they going to co-opt them for real? Or is it just kind of be like, oh, here's these new people that we really don't have any history with who now are winning championships? Like, is South Carolina going to be excited if Oklahoma wins a softball championship? I would guess not, but we'll see.
Yeah, your connection to your conference members is not what it used to be, and it's a weird dynamic moving forward of where the fandom and the connection now lies with your region or with your new league. It's a weird time.
Weird time.
Weird time in college athletics. Yeah.
Well, this will be provincial. I mean, this is going to be, I mean, if you're a college sports fan, the Southeast, you got somebody to root for. This is College World Series set That's up for beautifully sure. for you. And I, you know, these are clearly the best teams. Like, we just went through those seedings, 1 through 4 all made it. Like, it's going to be heavyweight on heavyweight, which is pretty cool for the baseball. One thing Ross mentioned, and I want to discuss, is rematches in college football. I don't mind the rematch as much as maybe others. I think that there was something great about college football that you didn't used to have rematches. And I would go back to last year's Michigan-Ohio State game as conceivably like one day one of these people, you know how they write books, sports books, and it's always the last, like they figured out that the word the last is how you sell a sports book somewhere in the market. I don't know why, but it's always the last this, the last that.
Oh yeah.
Was that the last? Because it was like, and I'm going to put a little asterisk on it because it's not true, but the last being, the last time two teams met in the regular season and it was truly a knockout game. Now, the year before was supposed to be the knockout game and Ohio State made the playoff anyway.
Right.
And was one field goal from getting TC, right? So it, the playoff had already kind of taken that away. The way the conference championships had already taken that away. We'd already started losing that. But there is a bit of nostalgia in college football, and I get why. That game, and Pat, you and I were there. We've covered a lot of big mm-hmm. games. Like, that was one of the most intense situations, like, games I've ever been at. The stakes were so enormous. And part of it was Connor Stallions and Harbaugh suspended and the pressure on Ryan Day. But it was like, it was like those old like wrestling matches where they'd like go up on a ladder, like a ladder match, like someone was coming off the ladder. And there was going to be no recovery. There was no like, well, like it was just everyone's heart was like, it was the tension for those of us who are not a fan of either team. Like, you could feel the tension, right?
Oh, yeah. Like walking to the stadium, you could feel it.
Even talking to the administration, like you go in the press box, hey, good to see you. Yeah. Like, you see some people, you know, from each school, and they're just like, they've got like this look in their eye. I haven't slept all week. I'm butterflies, like, you know. Got to win this game. And it's like, whoa, like this is tense. That is going to go away even more than it already kind of has gone away. Because again, we were a year before, we had that tension in Ohio Stadium. Michigan wins the game. Ohio State makes the playoff anyway and was so close to winning a national title. They would have been like, what happened? I don't remember that game.
Yeah.
But is the rematch, is it in our heads? Because the NFL has rematches. First off, a lot of teams play twice a year, play everyone in your division twice a year. Playoff rematches happen. Some, on occasion, you even get the last week and then the next week. That's the one I want to avoid. What I want to avoid really is Ohio State, Michigan playing, and then you're already locked in to play again the next week. That is the disaster, not the playoff. But is a rematch that bad? Was Georgia, Alabama bad because it was a rematch? Was Alabama LSU game in the BCS championship was bad because it was a bad game? It was boring for anyone who wasn't an Alabama fan, I guess. But is the rematch really that bad of a thing?
I mean, I'm with you. I don't think it's such a bad thing that you gerrymander the bracket to avoid it necessarily. I mean, if there's truly like a kind of a toss up where a 7 seed versus an 8 seed, and if you move the 8 to 7, then they're not playing a 9 that they had just played 2 weeks ago or whatever. Okay, but I don't think it will diminish the playoff. And I agree. Yeah, like the rematch of Georgia Alabama was fascinating. I thought for the national championship after they had played in the SEC title game, that was really interesting, and I think people will be able to latch on to that as well. You don't want the Iron Bowl to be played November 26th, then played again in an SEC championship game wherein there are no longer divisions. You don't want an SEC, you know, a Georgia LSU SEC championship game, then to get retread in as a semifinal. But I don't. You're gonna have to break some eggs to make this omelet, and I think the omelet's gonna be good, and so I would not let rematches necessarily, you know, impact the way you put together a playoff just to avoid them. That's my take.
Well, Pat mentioned the Iron Bowl. I think last week, the athletic director at Auburn and the athletic director at Alabama were on like a panel at a maybe a sports writing kind of annual meeting in Alabama. And John Cohen, the Auburn AD, mentioned how there's a possibility to have the Iron Bowl played 3 times in a season, right? Play the Iron Bowl, play in they rematch in the SEC championship game, as Pat just alluded to, and then play in the CFP. I mean, the odds of that happening are probably very small, but it's a possibility. I don't know how great that would be for the game in general. Dan said, like we're not used to a lot of rematches in college sports, and I think and in specifically in college football. And that, I think that's what makes, partly at least, what makes the regular season great and valuable and stuff, is that you maybe only get that one meeting. And there's something special about that. Like, I think I went on a rant last week about, you know, the NFL expanding the regular season. And mm-hmm. I think the gist of the rant was, can we just stop, right? Can we just stop expanding everything? Because the more you add on, the more waters down the product in general. So I think I feel that way about it. I think they're just like the NCAA basketball tournament has their policy of no conference games, right, Pat? The first two games, first round,
to the Sweet 16,
to the Sweet 16, yeah. Like, they try to avoid the conference games. The CFP, you know, they don't show any possibility in doing that. And I was, you know, I crunched the numbers for that story a couple months ago, and I was pulling up the stats and stuff. 7 times in the last 10 years, you would have had a first round rematch in the CFP. Basically, once a year, you would have had
7 and 10 years. First round win. Is that what you had?
Seven out of 10 years. Yeah. So you had 1 year, you had two first round rematches. And then 4 years, you had zero. And then 6 years, you'd have one, I believe, or 5 years, you'd have had one. And that's kind of how that fell.
So here's how I look at it. And I don't know. We'll see how this plays out. I don't think the rematch is the problem as long as you don't know the rematch is coming the first time around. I think it's great at the end of a season, in theory, when like Michigan, Ohio State were playing last year, and you said one of your seasons is over. But unless you're playing at the very end, that really is hard to prove is going to, like, you don't go into you don't go into Red River, say, early October and say, your season is over. If Texas beats Oklahoma, the Sooners are done. They cannot accomplish any of their goals because there's too many games to play. Sure. Now, you can say, I'm going to taunt you on the way out, and your drunken, hungover, sunburnt self is going to have to drive back to Lawton in misery, and I'm going to enjoy every second of that. Fine. That will still be there. I think it's that end of the year game when you have that opportunity. But let's say you have that. We beat you, get go home, all this stuff, all that excitement. Texas beat Oklahoma. Oklahoma beat Texas. And then they meet up. You have no way to be like, oh, well, you know what? We're going to see them again January 1st. Like, you don't know that. So I think right. That moment of emotion, I'm more concerned about the divisionless conference championship game. If Michigan and Ohio State last year, this is 1 year, they knew no matter who lost and who won, we're going to play a week later in Indianapolis, it would have ruined the entire thing.
Yeah.
Even if you say we were just going to go into the playoffs and maybe play again, it would take a little bit of the heat out of that. There's no question. But again, we've always had that. Ohio State made it the year before. But you don't know you're going to be automatically matched up. There's still, even with just 12 teams or 14 in a couple of years, it's still kind of a roll of the dice. And you're like, oh, all right, Selection Sunday, we're going to play again. You don't, as long as you don't know in the first game, I don't think it takes too much away.
Yeah. I mean, shoot, I said that I think that they should probably consider moving Ohio State, Michigan off the end of the regular season, because there's seems like a pretty darn good chance those two could play back-to-back weeks, not maybe even regularly. We'll see how things shake out. And
bizarre,
wouldn't it?
How would you even play that game? Would you like?
I don't know. I mean, do you sandbag the game? Do you? You know? I mean,
everyone
go with a total vanilla.
Talk about stolen signals. Plan? I mean, now a week later, you gotta have a Oh my God!
Yeah. And that would be so antithetical to I mean, like, yeah, Ohio State's coming to the big house, and guess what? We're gonna play the backups. Like, what? Could you imagine the home crowd watching your team sandbag that game so you then could go to Indy and play them for real the next week?
I don't know. Like, would the coach do that?
I don't think you can. I don't think you can. You know,
might be fired on Monday, and they have a Brian Day did that. Sharon Moore just going, I'm just not going to try in my first Ohio State Michigan game. We'll go because then you get blown out the next week. I don't even know how you do this.
Right.
The issue here, my fear of my thing, I think the threat, and I think that would be absolutely horrible. Like, I don't overreact a whole lot, but this would be absolutely horrible. And the threat is not at the playoff level. It's at the conference level. And they got so tired of the Big Ten. I don't know. The division, were the divisions that bad? I can't stand the conference championship game. So,
no, the games were terrible. The divisions were bad just because they ended up so imbalanced. You know, there was a very rare, especially in the Big Ten, rarely did you have a good championship game. I hate the we're preaching to the choir there. I hate conference championship games and have for 20 years.
Well, there soon could be going away, or at least some of them. I was, while you guys were going back and forth, I was trying to come up with those seven rematches of what they were the last 10 years in the CFP. I think I have some of them. Well, we talked about one of them was the Egg Bowl would be a rematch. The Mississippi State Ole Miss would have been a playoff, a first round
playoff.
Where
would the game? That was going to be in Oxford, right?
It was going to be in Starkville.
Oh, yeah. So the first one was in Oxford.
Yeah, Starkville was 8-9 seed.
The first one was in Oxford, right? I went to that, I think.
Yeah, I believe that's right. And then another one would have been TCU, Kansas State. There are a couple of Big 12. TCU, Kansas State, Baylor, Oklahoma State. TCU, Kansas State would have been 2014, I think. Baylor, Oklahoma State would have been just a couple of years ago, I believe. Ohio State, Penn State would have been a first round rematch. And then there's a couple of Florida first round rematches. Florida and Auburn would have played in a first round game after playing the regular season. And Georgia and Florida, of course. Ooh. So there's a couple of rival, about there's three really big kind of rival games, I guess you could say, that would have been in a first round rematch, which was the Egg Bowl, Georgia, Florida, and Ohio State, Penn State. Those would have been
as long as you didn't know. Let me take Oregon this year. Oregon, I think, is a top five team. I think we all probably agree on that. And have a very good chance of making the playoff. They get Ohio State at home on October 12th. And they are at Michigan on November 2nd. If we're going to look at the preseason, no offense to Penn State, who I think should be in this mix too. But if we're looking at who's the most likely top two teams that will meet in Indianapolis or again in a playoff, it would be Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, depending on quarterback play, right? They're probably the three favorites. No offense, Penn State, Wisconsin, some of the others that could get in there. But I don't think that the excitement level on October 12th, if they play Ohio, when Ohio State comes to Autzen, will be limited in any way because there's a chance they will meet again.
No.
And then when they do meet again, now the Big Ten championship game might be, you're still playing for seeding, but it's not, whatever. But if then you meet again on whatever date, you know, in the let's say it's a Big Ten versus Big Ten Rose Bowl. The bit of that would be so significant. So,
Well, you know what? And as a matter of fact, we saw it last year in the Pac-12 when Oregon and Washington played a great game in October and then played again in the conference championship game. And you could kind of see it coming, but I didn't. I
was jacked up for that game.
Big time exciting. Yeah. Yeah. Two big time exciting games. So you're right that I think if we aren't looking at those back to back, you know, where one game almost literally doesn't mean anything sort of scenarios. Those are bad, but other scenarios are not catastrophic.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back right after this. All right, one bit here, in terms of the playoff, the TV times are out. We've discussed this a bunch. We talked a whole TV bit going up against the NFL. Go back a couple episodes or an episode or two. And I thought it was a pretty good discussion, if I do say so for ourselves. But they put out the times and the broadcast partners. TNT is going to broadcast 2 first round games. That's fine. I'm sure they'll do a great job. The Saturday, December 21st, first round games will be TNT at noon and then at 4. The quarterfinals, here's my issue. And we kind of knew this was coming, but January 1st will be the Chick-fil-A Bowl, Peach Bowl, will feature one of the quarterfinals at 1 p.m. There will be a New Year's Eve game at 7:30, which I like. Game should be over by 11:30, something like that. That's fine. One game, no problem. Then we have a triple header on New Year's Day. I mean, that's going to be unbelievable. So great. Just add another game. But game 2 is the Rose Bowl. And the Rose Bowl's kickoff time on ESPN? 5 p.m. Eastern.
5 o'clock.
The Rose Bowl.
Shocking.
Nobody could make the Rose Bowl move to 4 p.m. Eastern. They got to have the sunset at the end of the third quarter. That's what they want. This is when we play. And in some level, I appreciate the stubborn folks out there in Pasadena with their flower tradition, except when they have to move it for the NFL. But other than that, 5 p.m. The game should be at 4. The game is at 5. The game is at 5, and the problem isn't at 5. It's that the All-State Sugar Bowl is now scheduled for 8:45 Eastern.
It'll be 9:15.
It'll be late.
Yeah. And it will end at 1 a.m. like it did last year.
That's right.
So if there's overtime, of course it could be overtime. Oh, my God, Alabama and Michigan. It was a close game. Went to overtime. Who could have ever imagined? Everyone? I don't know who's going to be in the Rose Bowl. If I could pick it, I would no longer do this podcast, and I would just sit back on my futures bet. But I do not know that. But I know that the game is likely to be close and could go to overtime. And so once again, we could have a January 1st where you are so excited to watch college football that the 8:45, we get a game, one of the epic games in college football, like last year's Texas-Washington game, where a large portion of their hardest core fans really have to make a massive sacrifice to watch one of the most important games of the year. And this schedule on January 1st should be Chick-fil-A Bowl at noon. All of a sudden, big noon kickoff, doesn't matter. They'll cut into your tailgate time. They'll cut into your tailgate time, but the Rose Bowl at 5, it should be noon, 4, 8.
Yep.
That's all I got. I don't even know. Come on, Rose Bowl. Right. The sun will set at the very end of the game. Like, you could have the game-winning kick. The game-winning kick right as the San Gabriel's light up in purple. It could be incredible. Live a little, Rose Bowl people.
No, they want their poetry and video at the third of the third quarter, so then they can actually, cover the game theoretically in the fourth quarter. So
why can't anyone make them move? Why is this impossible? I know.
I don't know.
History and tradition, Dan.
We have a contract. History and tradition. Oregon is in the Big Ten. Stanford is in the 8. Don't tell me about tradition. Yeah. These people don't care at all about any of it. We could have Ohio State, Michigan play 3 consecutive weeks. Auburn, Alabama. Let's have 3 Iron Bowls. Oh, tradition.
Mm-hmm.
It's one hour.
You're not going to like what could happen in the new playoff and the new contract starting in 2026, which is the Rose Bowl as a permanent quarterfinal played on its same date in time.
I'm fine if they just move it an hour. Move it an hour. Remember the tradition of the Rose Bowl when they played it at AT&T Stadium in Arlington and the sun? Remember that? And the sun set over the Walmart?
Yeah, it was nice.
It's incredible. The visions, the strip malls of the Metroplex suburban sprawl lit up in purple. It was, I'd shed a tear. America, man. I don't know what
this is. It's only tradition when it also is dictated to help TV ready.
I'd say I'm an old man, like, you know, you get off my lawn, but I'm yelling at older men. And I've been yelling it since I was a younger man.
Yeah.
Like, I'm literally asking, you know, to stop being so stuck in your ways. I got nothing.
Man yells at old man.
Yeah, older man.
Yells at clouds.
All right. Oregon State lost in the baseball team, lost in the College World Series, ending officially the Pac-12 conference, I think.
12:33 a.m. January 10th, 2024, Eastern time, 9:33 Pacific time. That's when the Pac-12 ceased.
Time of death.
Time of
not
death.
Not June.
Past
June.
Of the time and date of death.
June, not January.
June. Sorry, June, did I say June. January?
June. I think it went when the great Bill Walton passed away. We did not discuss that. It was sad. And Bill Walton just couldn't. He was like, nah.
Yeah, I'm not sticking around for this.
Yeah. I'm not happy, but it's like there's an element that he didn't have to try to grin and bear and watch this thing.
Did you guys see the fitting?
I don't want to say it's
good.
Never
had to see UCLA play a football or basketball game in the Big Ten.
Absolute treat that I loved watching his basketball broadcasts. Just watching Arizona State play Washington in some rando Thursday night game, and you just listen for him. Go ahead, Ross. You were going to say something.
He was more entertaining, than many of the games he covered. No, did you guys see? I think it was it the Celtics that did the shirts and the jerseys and the little pins that were. Come on, what am I thinking of? The rainbow kind of color. Tie-dye pins, tie-dye colors, which he was known to wear. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. There can't be enough Walton tributes for me. I loved the guy. Loved listening to him call games, but interacting with him, too. He just was such a unique and really happy character. Wonderful guy.
All right. Well, the Pac-12 is officially done. So it will scatter our teams. Maybe we can talk another time about who's set up best. But yeah, Walton was just such a unique character. You just can't really beat it. All right. We have an update on the North Carolina bill. This actually got more interest than I thought, where the bill in North Carolina, the lawmakers were going to make North Carolina and North Carolina State play each other every year in football and basketball, at least. And then in football, they were going to have to schedule over a 8-year period, a home and home with the other Division I state public teams, Appalachian State, Charlotte, and East Carolina. And the deal was, it's good for tourism, it's good for all the stuff. And it's kind of interesting. A whole bunch of other people listening and on social media and stuff were like, hey, we should do that in this state. We should do that. You know, everyone's got those teams, right? Most places have those teams. So why not do this? Keep the money and it's better for the local fans and all of those things. And I feel like, you know, there's a little bit of like, well, Big Brother can't play. Like, the division between Big Brother and Little Brother now is so significant. Like, is North Carolina or, you know, I mean, especially if you're in the SEC, you know, is Ole Miss and Southern and Mississippi State really worried about Southern Miss surpassing them? They're going to have like $50 million more to spend every year. So things like that could be a big deal. But unfortunately, the bill, I don't know if unfortunately, but this is just the situation. Bill is dead. Is that right? To our congressional correspondent. Now this is state legislature.
Yeah.
So what do you,
this is state legislature.
You're really getting into it, Mr. Washington.
I can't take credit for digging up this story. Okay. This is our guy, okay. Brian Murphy, who reported last week that bill is basically dead, that it won't advance to the floor for any kind of debate or a vote. So it had, the bill had the hearing and it had a committee hearing, but it won't advance past that. House Speaker, North Carolina House Speaker Tim Moore told to WRAL and the writer Brian Murphy that he promised them that they would have the hearing in the committee hearing, and they did, but it won't advance. He didn't really give an explanation why it wouldn't advance. Something tells me they probably have, you know, more important matters to deal with, maybe, than scheduling of football games. But I would think that David Willis, who's the representative who sponsored the bill, probably isn't too happy, because he gave some comments to Brian Murphy that he was hoping to continue to push the bill and pass it this session. But this is something similar that happened 25 years ago or so, 20 years ago, when in the state of Arkansas, they I think they had a hearing, proposed bill to have Arkansas play Arkansas State. That bill died as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting theory, but I agree. Yes, I would like to think our politicians have more pressing issues than trying to make teams play each other in football. I will say, though, if to the point that we made last pod or two pods ago, whatever, that if state legislatures are really concerned about state tourism and that sort of money, then maybe they should get involved in helping make sure that the local football programs are funded to a level that will keep tourism robust, keep people going to the stadiums and going to these games. So we'll see where it goes.
I'm not sure they have better things to do.
Okay. Dan Wetzel, hot take.
I mean, I don't know what they do, but I don't. No idea what they do all year. Like, does that much really change? Like, dated, like, okay, if you live in, you have like a, most places you'll have a mayor, you have a city council, a mayor, a house of representatives in your state, a senate in your state, a governor, a house of representatives in the country, a senate in the country, and then a president, right?
Yeah.
That's got all eight those governing bodies. How much really, like, what like, if you went back 5 years ago, how many things were, like, dramatically different? I don't mean to turn this, like, someone's going to call it something really big, right? But I'm just saying, like, these multiple Supreme Courts, like, I mean, it's just sort of like, okay. I don't know what you're all doing, but there's eight groups of you.
We do have some elected officials who listen to the pod.
They
this
do.
Is your chance to get in and educate Dan.
Oh, believe me, I have gotten civic
government
lessons.
Government 101.
We would do more, but these other clowns won't let us. Oh, okay. I don't want to hear it. All right. Let's get to a real judge's ruling that matters. A real judge's ruling that matters. Quite incredibly, we've had the many discussions over whether a hot dog is a sandwich. Remember that big debate? Really gripped America.
Sure. Totally.
Believe me, it gripped America a lot more on whether we should, like, raise the gas tax by 5 cents or whatever these guys are doing. Like, everyone had an opinion. Is a hot dog a sandwich? Well, in Indiana, someone named Martin Quintana, the owner of Famous Taco, a Mexican-style restaurant that serves made-to-order burritos, tacos, and other food items, located about up in the area of Fort Wayne, Paris. He wanted to upgrade the space from a single-family designation to a limited commercial occupancy for his business. And in order to be improved, this is from USA Today, he would have to agree to a written commitment that highlighted specific restrictions for his business. To be compliant, Quintana's restaurant had to be a, quote, sandwich bar style facility that sold made to order or Subway style sandwiches. In addition, the commitment excluded fast food restaurant chains like Arby's, McDonald's, and Wendy's. His lawyer said, it kind of became an argument, is a taco a sandwich or not? A taco. We're all familiar with the taco. Much like a hamburger, a hot dog, it kind of has a, you know, bread, and then there's... Okay, so in order to, this is government, right? In order to get this guy's getting his things approved, he had to sell sandwiches, not tacos, apparently. So the argument is this thing a taco a sandwich? And in 2019, this began. 5 years later, Judge Craig Bobe of the Allen Superior Court ruled that Famous Taco was eligible to open and operate its thing. The court agrees with Quintana that tacos and burritos are Mexican-style sandwiches. And therefore, he can expand his thing. So, the ruling is a taco is a sandwich. Now, I don't know what you do with the torta, which is an actual sandwich.
Also, a key qualifier in that, Mexican style.
So, is a taco a sandwich? Did this judge in Indiana, I mean, I feel bad for this guy. He's trying to like expand his little family business. Seems like there's a little red tape here, but did Big Sandwich come along and try to block this thing? I don't know what happened.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Exactly.
Is a taco
feels like the sandwich consortium out there is squeezing
this
guy.
Is a taco a sandwich, Pat?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, pick your bread style or whatever whatever holds the stuff together, and it's a sandwich. Now, where you really get into the weeds is then all of a sudden P.F. Chang's is going to come along and say our lettuce wrap then should be a sandwich because the lettuce is basically serving like a tortilla or whatever.
Lettuce sandwich.
I don't know whether you want to go down that road or not, but... yes, the taco, sure. And you know what? Tacos are better than most sandwiches. So not only can they serve the same purpose, but they can taste better while you're eating them. So I am certainly pro Mr. Quintana in his battle against Big Sandwich, which is clearly trying to squeeze him here in Fort Wayne. Leave the man alone. Let him serve his tacos.
If your definition of a sandwich is basically... having two of the same ingredients holding together other ingredients, then there's a lot of things that could be sandwiches, right? Certainly, we could go through all the lettuce wraps, and so on. And tacos would qualify for that. I guess a burrito would qualify for that. Although I think a burrito is more of like a wrap.
Yeah,
but maybe a wrap is also a damn sandwich.
Let me add this. The judge ruling says the original. So this would also permit restaurants to serve made-to-order Greek gyros, Indian naan wraps, and Vietnamese banh mi. I think how they say it.
Banh mi
sandwiches would also go in. I mean, because you could argue, like, is a sushi roll a sandwich? It's kind of a burrito.
It is. Banh mi is definitely a sandwich.
Banh mi is literally. That shouldn't even have been any question.
Yeah.
Gasp. Wow. Now, I mean, we really are opening Pandora's box if we go to the like sushi roll. You know?
I mean, where do we stop? But like, what is the? I don't know why people get so like. I guess there's somebody doesn't want this guy selling tacos.
See, that's this. I smell a rat here. I do think some sandwich chain in Fort Wayne is feeling threatened and trying to rub out the taco people.
Why did the Fort Wayne Plan Commission spend 5 years fighting this?
5 years. Mm.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It does seem slightly excessive.
Something you have other things to do, right? And there's something else you could be doing.
I don't know. My big takeaway from this podcast is Wetzel thinks the politicians do nothing.
Well, they do something. Like, I mean, I've been to Fort Wayne. I've been in the areas around Fort Wayne, Allen County. You should want any business that could possibly want to stop by and open. Is somehow Allen County, Indiana, better off with less tacos? Nobody's better off with less. You want fewer tacos. You want more tacos in every city.
That's right.
What is this anti-taco brigade? We want fewer dining. I mean, 5 years? I don't know. That doesn't work it for me. All right. One more. story here. Final story here. This was a crime ring that ended, fortunately, terrorizing. This is just, there's nothing good about this, but what the hell? An 81-year-old man was arrested in Azusa, California, for terrorizing his Southern California neighborhood for years. 81-year-old man now, with a slingshot.
Wow.
There's this old dude in Azusa, California, running around his neighborhood with a freaking slingshot.
Well, what's the ammo, though?
Ball bearings. So this is...
Oh, yeah, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, not...
Yeah.
Detectives learned that during the course of 9 to 10 years, dozens of citizens were victimized by a... Got to be the first time this sentence, these phrases ever come across. Serial slingshot shooter.
Wow.
According to the police.
Who's old?
The man,
say that a few
man
times
is suspected of breaking windows and car windshields and of narrowly missing people with ball bearings shot from a slingshot. And they pieced it together and figured out, they did like the forensic, this is going to be a forensic, what's that show? Forensic file. Yeah. That the shots were basically coming from his backyard. And then they went and searched a search warrant, found a slingshot and ball bearings. And we're not aware of any motive other than just malicious mischief. What in the world?
81-year-old is acting like a 14-year-old delinquent, you know? This is fantastic.
Get a hobby, bro.
He did. Just happened to be one that's kind of illegal, you know, causing injury or damage to his neighbors.
I want to see what this slingshot looked like, too. Like, was it professionally made, you know, probably, or is this, this some, if he's doing this for years, it's probably some like advanced, you know, slingshot with incredible technology.
I would think these things, this isn't like David and Goliath stuff. Although, David did get the slingshot. Look at how good the slingshot is.
They're using a broken limb in a rubber band.
I will say, like, I'll give the dude credit. He had to have been kind of stealthy to get away with it for years, apparently, until they finally caught him. So
I'm sure some people were just like, how did my windshield break?
Probably
the ball bearing goes into the lawn or so. You don't see. I don't.
Where was this at again?
Southern California, Azusa, California, near LA, about 25 miles east of LA. I mean, you're like, oh, old Mr. Stevens down there. He's a nice old man. No, he's not.
No. You know, every time Mr. Stevens comes by, it seems like ball bearings come. You know,
stuff gets broken,
tearing through the air.
I don't know.
I kind of like this guy. Yeah, I think, it's good. You know, I mean, some real passive aggressive sort of old man behavior. You know, he's letting his neighbors know that's how I feel about you. He's going to shoot out your car window with a slingshot.
Anyway, be wary. Head on a swivel. Be careful out there. Even that kindly old man down the street could secretly be harboring a biblical weapon to get to take you out. We'll be back. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you later.